So this is a special version of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. And joining me now is David Rovick. David, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure, Emily.
And I understand you're quite the busy fellow these days, and you got to skedaddle on out of here pretty soon. You're going up to Berkeley.
I'm going up to Berkeley. I'm on a tour, so that's kind of, yeah, busy. Busy while it lasts.
And where are you playing up there?
At the Unitarian Church. It's on Cedar. Then Palo Alto tomorrow at the Unitarian Church there, I think. Unitarian conspiracy of some kind. And then I head south to Southern California and eventually to the conventions in Denver and the Twin Cities.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, for those in our audience who aren't familiar with you, I know there's many in the audience who are, but for those who aren't, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're coming from and what you're all about?
I grew up in the suburbs in Connecticut, and then it had to happen to somebody, I guess. And somewhere along the line got radicalized and started playing the guitar and started putting these things together as well. And I'm raising a small child in Portland and playing children's music and doing adult music as well. That's kind of, yeah, in one paragraph version right there.
Well, that's very abbreviated. You're a very well-renowned artist, and you've had some wide praise from all over the spectrum, from Amy Goodman to The Nation to a lot of different folks all over that appreciate your work and the music that you write. How long has this tour been going on for?
Well, this tour is about a little more than a month, and it's only been going on for a week now. Just did a couple gigs in Oregon and then Humboldt and stuff and Santa Cruz last night, and yeah, just kind of, it's a month long tour. We're going around the western U.S. sort of on the way to the protests to try to encourage people to come and have a good time and make a difference out there in Denver and the Twin Cities. There are inexpensive ways to get out there for people wanting to go from San Francisco. One thing that I've heard about is that I can put people in touch with somebody who is going out there on a bus to both the Denver and Twin Cities, and I believe food and lodging and bus fare going to both protests for $200.
Wow, so
there's a deal. Yeah,
that is a wicked good deal.
Yeah.
So, are you going to be out of a job coming this election, or what?
Oh, well, no.
Hoping that another Republican doesn't get voted into office?
I'm sure that if Obama becomes president, there will be still lots to sing about.
I'm sure.
And we'll have lots of good work to be doing if he's president. And who knows, maybe having somebody there who's actually receptive to some nice ideas.
Are you optimistic about that?
I'm definitely a lot more optimistic about Obama than I am about McCain. I mean, I think there is, you know, anybody that says there's no difference between the major candidates in this election is kind of clueless because, you know, while it is very important to point out that the Democratic Party is basically rotten to the core, I think to ignore the difference between these candidates would be really silly. I mean, there's
the lesser of two evils.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, he's got some really interesting background, and you know, he's got a real sketchy voting record. You know, he's voted right on some things, wrong on a lot of things, and he's got an interesting background, and he's also intelligent, and there's a lot of community organizing going on around his campaign, and this is also, I think, potentially a good thing. I mean, there's a lot of sort of exciting things about this campaign, but you know, it's not like I'm holding my breath about it, you
right.
know. But I think
something's got to give. I mean, that's the way I feel about it. Something's got to give eventually, and things can't continue on the way they have been going. So, at this point, I think I'd vote for a sack of potatoes than for than for a Republican. But
and I think there are elites all over the world who, including here in the U.S., who very much want Obama in the White House. I mean, there's a lot of reason why a lot of people across the board support him. I mean, of course, for regular folks in this country, they support him because they hope that he's going to make, you know, be real different. But, you know, for the elite, I think some of them support him because they just, you know, they want the U.S. to have some kind of standing in the world, some kind of moral credibility. You know, they don't want, you know, the U.S. to have this face of just, you know, this vicious empire, you know, It's bad for their business, really. So there's a lot of reasons why I think some of them are the more enlightened, and parts of the elite want Obama as well.
Yeah. So what are we going to hear from you now?
Well, let's see. I'll try. This has been my, I don't know, I just I just saw that wonderful sign out there and about all the things you guys don't like, and I'm going to start with this.
It's a long laundry list.
I don't drive a car because they run on gas, but if I did, it'd run on biomass. I ride a bike or sometimes a skateboard, so fuck off all you drivers and your yuppie hordes sitting all day in the traffic queues. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't eat meat. I just live on moldy chives or the donuts that I found in last week's dumpster dives. Look, you people in that restaurant, I think you are so sad when you could have been eating bagels like the ones that I just had. I think it is a shame all the bourgeois things you do. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't wear leather, and I like my clothes in black, and I made a really cool hammock from a moldy coffee sack. I like to hop on freight trains. I think that is so cool. It's so much funner doing this than being stuck in school. I can't believe you're wearing those brand new shiny shoes. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't have sex, and there will be no sequel, because heterosexual relationships are inherently unequal. I'll just keep on moshing to anti-flag and crass until there are no differences in gender, race, or class. All you brainwashed breeders, you just haven't got a clue. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't believe in voting, I think consensus is the key. I don't believe in stupid notions like representative democracy. Whether or not it works, I know it is the case that only direct action can save the human race. So when I see you in your voting booths, then I know it's true. I'm a better anarchist than you. I am not a pacifist, I like throwing bricks, and when the cops have caught me and I've taken a few licks, I always feel lucky if I get a bloody nose, because I feel so militant and everybody knows. By the time the riot is all through, I'm a better anarchist than you. I'm a better anarchist than you.
All right, excellent. Well, I got to wonder now. So you said earlier that you grew up in the suburbs of Connecticut. What was it exactly in your upbringing that just kind of made you go from that, you know, cookie cutter, you know, white upper middle class kind of lifestyle to what you lead now?
And well,
how did your perspectives change?
Yeah, well, it wasn't an entirely cookie cutter thing. I went to an alternative hippie elementary school, and my parents were classical musicians. And, you know, not like, they're not raving radicals and, you know, but they're progressive, and I went to this Unitarian camp where there's anti-nuke organizers coming through, because it was in the same town as the oldest online nuclear reactor in the U.S.
In Western Massachusetts?
Yeah, Roe Camp, yeah.
I've heard of that. I used to live in Western Massachusetts. That's funny.
All right, yeah. Roe Camp, yeah. Which in the late 70s, early 80s was a hotbed of anti-nuclear organizing, as well as a hotbed of whatever, all kinds of other things.
You know? So that kind of like got you out of where you were, and was obviously provided a different perspective.
Yeah, and then I'd go back to the suburbs and all the Republicans and stuff, you know. But for a little brief few weeks during the summers, I had a little glimpse of alternative realities, and then, you know, left the suburbs and never looked back, of course, when I was 18, like any sensible person, you know.
And is that when you moved out to the West Coast?
I did, yeah, at that time. Well, let's see. No, first I went to college for a year in Indiana, and then I moved out to the West Coast.
Little stopover.
Yeah,
point.
A little stopover. That was meant to be perhaps slightly longer. Yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, can we hear another song?
Sure. Let's see. Here's my unofficial theme song for the Republican National Convention and all the bridges of the Twin Cities. It can happen in a moment. Sometimes it does, when what could be is and what shouldn't be was. There are times when you gotta stand steady. There are other times when you gotta be ready. The window can open, seems so wide, but you can never tell when it's gonna slam shut. One day you're a target on the firing ranges. The next day all of a sudden everything changes. When it all comes crashing down. So easy to feel, standing still, then the scene is revealed, and you're on top of the hill. At that point, you know you can let it go by, or spread your wings and take to the sky. When it all comes crashing down. When what you know may all be true, but sometimes all that's real is what you do. Some moments are coming, others came, and then there are those when you just gotta take aim. When it all comes crashing down. When it all comes crashing down. When it all comes crashing down.
Excellent. Excellent. So how was the show last night?
It was really fun, and I hear that Skidmark Bob made a great little PSA about it, and it was great. Had a nice little crowd, and
how many people were at the Resource Center for Nonviolence?
Oh gosh, I didn't count. You know, was it maybe somewhere around, I don't know, 18, 20, something like that, I guess.
Nice little crowd.
Yeah, it was fine. I mean,
and you're used to doing all sorts of crowds. I mean, everything from the very small to the huge mass crowds,
yeah.
Isn't that right?
Somewhere between 5 and 500,000, I guess. Never had, you know. I mean, if it's a show of mine, then you know, if it's just me, then the crowds are usually in the, you know, somewhere between 5 and 50. You know, sometimes 100 or 200.
Well, some of those big protests are like Van Halen shows. Those
well, yeah. If it's a protest, then I get to ride on that whole thing, and somehow they let me play at them quite frequently. Really, and I have no complaints about that. And it's just such a blast. I mean, there's nothing I get more of a thrill out of, pretty much, than I can think of, you know, that, at least with my clothes on, I suppose. You know, it's great.
Well, I can't even imagine the amount of people that you've met on your travels, between the people that you meet on the street talking to, and then the people that are also partaking in the protests up on stage, Noam Chomsky and the like, and that sort of thing. I'm sure you've met
so many luminaries. Yeah, absolutely. Although, of course, most of the time it's in situations where nobody has time to talk or anything like that. You know, there's always too much happening. But yeah, there's so many different people. I never meet people on the street. I'm pretty antisocial, so walking around Portland, I never meet anybody. But at protests, it's easy to meet people.
Right. You know, well, I think we were at the same protest a number of years back. We were speaking earlier during the break that what
cold.
Did I say? Yeah, the February 15th protest in 2003 in New York City, where there was, it had to have been a million people there. I mean, there's already a million people in New York City anyway, but that place was a complete mob, and it was absolutely beautiful, beautiful situation, despite the fact that it was 3 below 0and really, really blustery wind.
It was incredibly cold and windy, and of course all those buildings just amplify the wind, you know.
Yeah. I don't know, though. I think there might have actually been more cops and protesters, despite the fact that there were thousands and thousands and thousands of protesters. I could not believe the amount of law enforcement they had there.
There were certainly tens of thousands of cops. And, of course, they had built up these massive barricades surrounding every block of every, you know, I mean, it's just the most obscene militarized situation. And they weren't letting anybody move backward or forward, inside or out of the boxes. is absolutely appalling. And of course, probably, you know, estimates are that as many as half the people who attempted to get in never even got in. And I talked to lots of people who were walking up and down one of the other avenues who couldn't even get near the avenue where the protest was happening. It was, I mean, the New York City Police Department were just absolutely appalling. I mean, of course, that's, you know, Mayor Bloomberg, who doesn't, you know, seems to be no better than his predecessors, and that's just horrible.
Yeah, that was a cold one, but very memorable.
Oh, it was great.
I'll remember that for the rest of my life. And I went there, and everyone knew the war was coming, and there was that feeling of like inevitability. But at the same time, there's always that little smidgen of hope that you kind of have in your heart, and maybe if enough people, because that was the one that happened all over the world.
Yeah,
it was like in every single major city.
Yeah,
and there's just like that kind of like, you know, that little squeak of hope that something might actually change, and sometimes it does, but sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
But the show of solidarity is always important, no matter what the outcome.
I totally agree.
Yeah, it's very important.
A lot of people all over the world. Yeah, millions in so many different cities.
So, what is there a lineup for the two at the conventions? Other people aside from yourself, other musicians, other activists that are going to be there that you know of?
Oh, all kinds of folks are going to be at both of them. All kinds of other performers and other, organizers and speakers and, you know, political parties and nonprofits and activist groups of all sorts. I mean, you know, it'll be all kinds of folks will be doing. I mean, there's going to be, of course, there's going to be protests, especially at the Democratic convention. I think it'll be a lot of a combination of people just outright, you know, who, you know, despise everything about the Democratic Party, and then you'll have others who are more like having a sort of parallel convention to say, okay, here's where the Democratic Party should be going. You know, that's like the Progressive Democrats of America and stuff. You know, and then you got Ralph Nader and the Greens. Well, not the Greens, and Ralph Nader and his, you know, whoever is whoever's going along with his on his ship these days.
Not this time.
You know, not the Greens and stuff. But he'll be there. He'll be there. And his main point is open the debates, and which is something that I think
is very important.
A lot of people,
very important.
Absolutely.
And this will be the first time, and I don't mind saying this will be the first time that I've voted Democrat in my entire voting career.
I've
gone Nader the last couple times.
Yeah.
And it wasn't my fault. I was in Massachusetts at the time, so it wasn't my fault.
Well, the whole system is so rigged.
It really
that we
is.
Have to make these kinds of ridiculous choices. You know?
I know. It is ridiculous. Yeah. But I don't know. I think if something was to happen like it did in 2000, I think it would just be complete anarchy. At least I would hope.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
that's
I would
what
hope.
We all hoped for the first time, and that didn't happen.
God.
So
yeah, we'll see. Who knows what's in store?
Well, I think they're feeling a little more pressure now. I think they're feeling a little more under the thumb and more scrutinized, because since then, so much information and just independent journalism has spawned just from that. I mean, that whole debauchery of falsely electing the wrong person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that I think it's going to be a little more challenging to do that again, hopefully.
Yeah, I hope so. The president select syndrome. I love that word, debauchery.
It's one of my favorite, too. So can you play one more? I know you got to scram,
more.
But
one
I would love to hear.
One more for the pirate flag up there.
Great. And thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it. And thanks so much for all you've done for Free Radio.
My pleasure. Thanks all that Free Radio has done for me. Oh, and for society at large. I went outside one day and a man was standing there. He had a great big beard and lots of hair. He said, "Won't you come down to the shore and join my jolly crew? We'll wander around the world beneath the skies of blue. We'll sail upon the seven seas, travel near and far. Take from the rich and give to the poor and say, har, 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 har. We'll go out on the ocean. And when the coast is clear, we'll eat birthday cake each day of the year. We'll land on a little island, then we'll form a choir, blow on whistles and kazoos, and dance around a fire. We'll sail upon the seven seas, travel near and far. Take from the rich and give to the poor, and say, har, 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 har.
we see the Navy, we will shout with pride. We are scary, hairy pirates, so you better run and hide. We'll stamp our feet upon the floor, and our peg legs too. We'll take your stolen treasure, 'cause that's what pirates do. We'll sail upon the seven seas, travel near and far. Take from the rich and give to the poor, and say har, 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 har. We'll sail upon the seven seas, travel near and far. Take from the rich and give to the poor, and say har, 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 har.
Beautiful. I think we should make that our theme song here.
Oh, yeah. I think it would be a good one.
Well, David, thank you so much for coming in and joining us this afternoon. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Emily. My pleasure.
And come back anytime.
I will.
And have a great time up north and then down south.
Thank you.
Out to the Midwest. Good luck to you.
And I hope to see you, many of our listeners out there at the conventions.
Yes, yes. And you mentioned earlier about that. I don't know if it's a program or a friend that you know of that can get people out to the protest for a reasonable amount of money with lodging and food and everything you were mentioning earlier.
Yeah, there's folks going from the Bay Area out there by bus doing that. And Andy Caffrey from up in Humboldt was talking about that. So I can ask him about where that's going. I'll bet it would be readily available information on Indie Media in San Francisco or on the probably rncnotwelcome.org or something. If people go to davidrovics.com, they'll see links to the to the various organizations involved with the protests and stuff as well.
And can people get your music on there too?
Yeah, they just go to davidrovics.com, click on audio video, and you'll see all kinds of videos and all kinds of MP3s and whole concerts and all kinds of stuff like that. Yep.
Great.
For free.
Awesome. I like free.
Yeah, free is good for lots of different reasons. And folks out there who don't think so, it's interesting how it works with not just the principle of it, but also the math. I mean, you put your music up for free download, more people are going to hear it. And that has an impact on your career, not just on people, too. You know, it's totally symbiotic, basically, I would say. You know, and the music industry is full of shit, because what they say about the whole phenomenon is really only applicable to the multimillionaire bands at the very top of their thing, but for the other well over 99% of other professional musicians in the world, I think free downloads are overwhelmingly a positive development for people to be able to do music as a living, actually, in addition to just, all the other stuff, getting music out there around the world and cross-cultural, across everything, horizontal spreading of music. That's, that's all positive in and of itself. But the fact is, I think that, for people are listening to independent music because it's free on the web, and they're not buying as many corporate CDs as a result. There's a direct result. And some of those people organize gigs for you. Most independent musicians make a living as performers, and the way that they make a living is because somebody out there wants to organize a gig. So you figure you get 1,000 people downloading a song, 1 out of 1,000 is going to want to organize a gig. It works. That's my spiel on that.
Well, thank you so much, David. We really appreciate you coming in. This has been Guess Who's Coming to Dinner on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM, always on the web at freakradio.org.